What's up, guys? Welcome to the Think Computers Weekly Tech Podcast, episode 53, which means we are starting into year two of the podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Amazon. If you go to thinkcomputers.org/Amazon and happen to purchase something, that helps us out and helps the podcast keep on going. Of course, with me is Derek. How's your morning going there, Derek?
Oh, not bad. I mean, I basically just got up, so.
Yeah, me too, man.
Can't be going too bad.
Yes, I didn't sleep much last night, so.
That's no good.
Yes, I'm trying to hopefully get back on a better sleep schedule, so.
Nice.
But it is Friday, so that means we're doing the podcast.
Yes.
So I'm pretty pumped to talk about tech and everything that's going on this week. So we'll just jump right into it. And we'll start with our reviews we did this week. And the first one is a brand new headset from Corsair. And this is their Void Surround gaming headset. And this is a fairly, I would say this would be like a mid-range headset. Comes in around, I think it's $89.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, so the Void headset has been out for, since mid-last year. Was when their Void headset came out, and they had an analog version, which has the 3.5mm connection, and then they had a USB version, and then they had a wireless version. So the Void Surround kind of brings the USB version and the analog version together. So the whole idea behind this headset is it's more versatile for gamers. So if you have a console or a mobile device, you can use this with a 3.5mm connector. And then if you have a PC, it comes with a little USB adapter that gives you 7.1 surround sound.
Oh, nice.
So it gives you the versatility of not specifically having a headset for PC and then having another headset for maybe your console or something like that. This gives you one headset that you can use with all your devices, which is kind of nice.
And yeah, you can still have the surround.
Yeah.
Nice.
So yeah, so it's a nice headset, very comfortable. It still does not beat out my Kingston HyperX Cloud 2. It's still my favorite headset, and I'm currently wearing it. But this headset is extremely comfortable. It's designed really well too. This is actually my first Corsair Void headset, so I didn't get a chance to check out the originals. So it was nice to kind of learn what they really did and how they designed the headset. And they did a really great job on it. A lot of time went into design and everything like that. Very comfortable. Sounds really great. Microphone's good. Not a whole lot of issues with it, although because of the, I guess it's the material, at least for me, after wearing the headset for a decent amount of time, my ears would get really hot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of material is it?
Like a microfiber type thing.
So it just feels like it's trapping heat?
Yeah, so that was the only issue that I had. And that might be specific to me, too, for some reason. I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Your Cloud 2, is that a leather or?
Yeah, the Cloud 2 is leather.
Okay, yeah. See, I really prefer, initially at least, I prefer leather and long term. I've never tried a cloth one over any longer period of time, though, personally. But just seems like leather is a better material for that.
Yeah, so I use the Void Surround for around a 3-hour gaming session, and it would just get really hot. Yeah, that was the only issue. And again, that might just be me for some reason.
Yeah, too. I'd really pin that down.
Yeah, so, but besides that, it still was super comfortable. It's one of those headsets that you can wear for a very long time. So when you're wearing a headset for a long time, the two things that tend to bother me, at least, is the actual ear cups will annoy your ears, or the headband will just start to hurt your head. And I didn't have that issue with this headset, which means that Corsair really did take a long time, and they took a time to see what materials work best as far as comfort goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you don't find on a lot of headsets, because a lot of headsets, while they're comfortable for like the first hour, after that, you have to take them off. You have to take a break.
I know that feeling.
And if you're in an intense game or something like that, especially a game where you can't pause the game specifically, like, you know, esports.
Yeah,
a lot of these games that you can't really pause. you know, it's kind of stops your gameplay, really. So,
Distraction you don't need while you're playing.
Yeah, so this headset doesn't have that problem. It's a really great headset. I like it. And it's cool, like I said, it's great to see them make a headset that allows you to use it specifically for all of your devices, because this is compatible with everything that's out there.
Yeah, there's seems like either a handful or maybe a majority of manufacturers are trying to do this now.
Yeah.
To make a headset that is an all-in-one headset for all your devices.
Yeah, and what's nice is that, you know, the original analog Void headset could be used on PC, but it didn't give you the 7.1 surround sound.
Yeah.
So this gives you that.
And again, this is virtual.
Yeah.
Right? This isn't, yeah.
Yeah.
So still two single drivers.
Yeah, Dolby headphone.
And then what did you think about the surround?
It was good. What was great was it. This past weekend was Division Open Beta.
Yeah.
So having a big immersive world like that to use that in was actually pretty cool. And it's a lot of times in that game, you have to listen for where stuff's coming from so you can find enemies and stuff. And mm-hmm. It was very easy for me to use that headset and hear where things were coming from and then go over to the action.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I feel it worked really well. Very immersive. And I definitely would recommend this headset, especially at the price point too, because it's not all that expensive.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, so it's a good headset. I really liked it. And it's, again, my first time using a Void headset from Corsair. So I was actually really, I just really like the headset.
Yeah.
They put a lot of time into the design and everything like that, so.
Cool.
Yes.
I don't know. Corsair does a good job with their stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
In general.
Really surprised at this headset. So definitely one I would recommend. Again, I just had that small issue, so.
Yeah.
So, we'll move on from there to a pretty hefty motherboard, and this is the Gigabyte X99P SLI. And this is going to be one of the last X99 motherboards that we do see.
Yeah.
And it's cool because they've kind of added a lot of features on this board that you would see, that we saw get introduced with the Z170. So if you're not really sure, you don't follow it that much, X99 came out before Z170 did. And, you know, when X99 boards came out, they kind of had a set of features. But as things got developed and as things got released, those newer features came on with the Z170 chipset. And now Gigabyte has gone back and they've changed it. You know, change their X99 motherboards to add these features in with different revisions and, of course, new boards like the X99P SLI. So the biggest one is this has the Intel USB 3.1 Thunderbolt 3 controller.
Right.
And this controller is awesome.
This is bigger than just a new connector type.
Yeah, so this is extremely fast speeds. This will allow you to connect a multitude of different devices and get super, super fast speeds. So not only storage devices, you can actually connect displays to it as well. Mm-hmm. And they actually, so it's not really explained on the Gigabyte website, which is kind of weird, but what they actually, they give you DisplayPort to DisplayPort connectors with the board. So what you can do is you can actually connect your motherboard down through there's a DisplayPort in port on this board. So you connect your graphics card to your motherboard and then use the Type-C connector for like a 4K display.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you want to. So
that's pretty cool.
That connector is super powerful for a lot of different devices. And what's nice about it is that you can daisy chain. So you can... Yep.
Run one monitor to the next.
Yeah, so that's why they have that.
I find that to be like a super professional feature, right? Because I don't care personally, like with my multiple monitor set up, like
yeah,
they can, you know, just it's my room, it's my desk, you know, no big deal. But like in a professional environment, when you're like moving stuff around a lot, or you want it to be really clean, that allows you to just run monitor to monitor and like reduce the clutter and really give you a really simple setup.
And a lot of these Type-C devices, that's their power as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to worry about connecting something to power either. It's all being powered by the board.
Yeah. Yeah, they Gigabyte had a, did a, or featured that new Thunderbolt connector. Made a really big deal about it at CES, and yeah, it's a really, really nice board feature.
Yeah, so that's a big feature of this board. That's what separates it from the other boards in the line. Another thing that they did, which is, I think this is the one of the only X99 boards that they did this with, is they added the shielding on the PCI Express slots, which a lot of people think is just a cosmetic thing. Obviously, it makes the board look better, but at the same time, it protects the PCI Express slot and gives more stability to longer graphics cards. And, you know, this board does support four-way SLI as well as Crossfire. So if you're going to load this up with long cards, this is going to ensure that those cards are stable and they don't, you know, because they're such large cards, if you do install a large card, they're not going to damage the slot itself.
Yeah, maintain good contact.
Yeah, so you have that. Of course, everything else that you would expect, you have a 32 gigabit a second M.2 slot in there. You have SATA Express. You know, you have everything that you would want in this.
Is it a single M.2?
Yeah, single M.2.
Okay.
Which seems to fine for a lot of people because that's what they're using for their OS typically. You know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, X99, it's a power user board. I kind of would have thought they might have had two on it.
Well, in order to have enough PCI Express lanes for the USB / Thunderbolt controller.
Oh, right.
You know, and to have enough PCI Express lanes for four-way SLI and everything.
Yeah.
You know.
Got to kind of choose what to do with your bandwidth.
Yeah, so I think it's a good overall board. It's really, like I said, it is a power user board. X99 is a power user board.
Oh, yeah.
And this is obviously designed for a certain type of user. But I like it that they've added a lot of new functionality that we saw with Z170 got brought over to X99. So I kind of like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely nice. Good board. Not super expensive. I think it's $269.
Oh, wow. Which for X99, that's cheap.
Yeah, so it's not super expensive either. And it doesn't have all those like stupid features that you see in a lot of other boards that you just don't use. This is really specific. And yeah, I had a lot of fun testing it, and definitely an awesome board. So.
And kind of shout out to Gigabyte for even refreshing a final X99 board, right? I mean, they could have just let this die.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they give you one last powerful board for X99.
So. Yeah, and again, it's not just like, oh, we're just going to put out a board. They've actually gone ahead and, like as you said, refreshed it and added new features, which I like. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, definitely a really cool board. So, moving on from that to a gaming mouse. And I took a look at the CM Storm Zornit 2, which, of course, is the second revision of their Zornit mouse. And this is a claw-style mouse, which I'm not super familiar with because that's not really my play style or my, you know. But I did like the mouse. It's not overly large. It's kind of smaller than most mice. And that claw grip is actually pretty cool. I never really used a claw grip before, so it was kind of a little bit of an adjustment period, but I did like it. And the best thing about this mouse, it's very inexpensive. It's $32.99. And in that price, you get an Avago optical sensor, you get Omron switches, the software works really well, so 7 programmable buttons on the mouse. The scroll wheel actually lights up RGB, so you can kind of customize that to whatever you want.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, but there's one problem that I had with it, and this happens with a lot of mice over time, but only having this mouse for a few weeks, and the main mouse click started to squeal or squeak.
Really?
I don't know if you've ever had that problem before.
I've not.
So this happens when, say, like dust or something gets in the click mechanism.
And in the micro switch?
Yeah, so I was kind of surprised this happened so quickly, and I tried to fix it. So typically, so a lot of times you can fix this with compressed air, mm-hmm. and you can kind of blow it out, and I tried to do it multiple times, and I just couldn't get it to work. So that really kind of hindered my thoughts on this mouse, because if you're not wearing a headset, or if you don't have music on, that's going to be super annoying.
Yeah, it's literally just like a little squeak every time you click?
Pretty much every time you click, yeah. in the video that I have, in our YouTube video, I actually cover it, and I show you what it sounds like, and it's not very pleasant.
No.
So usually I keep mice that I review, I usually just use them till I get a next mouse to review, and I've already replaced it.
Yeah, that's not good.
So, again, I can't, because this is the first time we've checked it out, I can't tell you if that's on every one of those mice. I assume it's not. I assume that doesn't happen on every one, but that's what happened with our mouse. So, we kind of have to tell you that. But I think that if it's not an issue with the other mice, I think it's a great mouse for the price. Because you are getting a quality sensor, you're getting quality switches, you're getting software that works really well, you can customize the lighting, and I do like the overall style of the mouse. It's wider for that claw grip. It's really nice. I do like it.
But yeah, for the grip style, it looks good.
Yeah.
It's cheap though. So I mean, that might just be it.
Yeah. So that's the only issue that I did have with it. You know, I assume that's not going to be the issue with everybody, but that's kind of what happened with our mouse. So. And I haven't had that issue happen with a lot of mice lately, so I don't think it's an issue with, say, there's a lot of dust here on my desk, because I don't think there's a lot of dust on my desk either. So, you know, that's the only issue that I had, so...
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, because I really liked it, and I had planned on actually just using it, but I had to switch it out for something else, so...
Yeah.
You know, Ian, typically when we review products, we don't notice issues right away, and that was weird to see that issue come up right away.
I almost wonder if they'd want to send you another one.
Yeah, I think once they see the review, they might want to do that, so we'll see. But, yeah, that was just disappointing, because I did like the mouse, so...
Yeah.
So if it didn't have that issue, I would definitely like it a whole lot more, and I'd probably still be using it right now. So... you know, and I tried to research if that was an issue, and I couldn't find anything with that specific mouse.
Oh, boy.
You know, so I try to, you know, research online and see if anybody had that issue with the mouse, with that specific mouse, and there wasn't anything online about it, so. So, yeah. So, but yeah, those are our reviews for the week.
Yeah.
You know, three pretty good products, and definitely a lot of stuff coming next week, which we'll talk about. But we'll move on to Water Cooling 101, which you continue in your series where you're showing everybody how to build a water-cooled PC step-by-step, and we're on episode 5, which is finally the time where we get to install our basic loop.
Yeah, so long time coming, really a long time coming, really, for us. We've been working on it for a really long time. Finally got to the point where we could put it together. It's had a lot of stuff happen in between, so it kind of spread it out a little more than we would have liked. But yeah, it was pretty exciting to finally. I've had these parts for like months. Finally put it together, and I take you through step by step, like Bob said, and show you everything you need to know about putting a loop together. It's really not hard, and especially with this guide, I mean, you can see exactly what you need to do. And I mean, I've been doing this for years. I believe I've said that before. So all the little tricks that I've learned to make life easier when you're doing this, I've shared. So it's definitely, I think it's a really, really strong resource for a first timer, trying to get going into water cooling.
Yeah. That's the thing I really like about this whole series is it's not just like, okay, here's some parts, let's put it together. It's, you know, you've in this series, you've gone over what the parts are, what to look for in these parts. And then in this guide, you go over not just, you know, let's install everything. This is how you're supposed to install stuff. This is how you're supposed to fill it. This is how you're supposed to do this, this, and this, you know?
Yeah.
That's what I really like about this guide. It's detailed, and it's for anybody. It's for the seasoned water cooler, but at the same time, it's a guide that the first-time water cooler can go through and they can use as a resource for when they're doing their build, which I really like.
Yeah. Yeah, I tried to make it really, really easy to follow, so I hopefully achieved that. Because it's a little overwhelming to get into this just because of the amount of stuff, but I feel like, you know, 5 episodes in, we've really taken our time with it, and I feel like you should be able to read and then immediately go out and buy parts, know what you're looking at, and then be able to easily assemble your loop.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. I definitely think it came out pretty well. Yeah, it's just great to be able to have a resource for people, and it's awesome that we were able to do this. So, pretty. Yeah. If you haven't checked out the series, I would go through each article because you learn a lot. Even I learned a lot, and I mean, I'm not an expert at water cooling, but I mean, a lot of the articles that Derek did had a lot of information that I had no clue about. Especially when it comes to what to look for when you're buying parts and things like that. So definitely go ahead and check out the entire article series. There's actually a button on the site that says Water Cooling 101. So if you click on that, that should have all of the articles listed there. So definitely check that out.
Appreciate the reads.
Yes. And it is Friday, so that means it is Case Mod Friday, and that is where we cover a build or a mod that's been completed in the community, just to show you what's going on out there, and of course, give praise to the modders who obviously take their time to do this. And this week, we have something very interesting. So, typically, we cover these awesome water cooling builds and these, you know, using the newest cases and just awesome stuff. And this is completely different. This is sort of a retro build where somebody went out and they bought a 1995 IBM Aptiva computer from, I think he bought it from a used PC store, thrift store.
Yeah, it was pretty much a junk band.
Yeah, thrift store, and he completely gutted it. Redesigned the original case to fit modern components and put it all back together, and he even modded the floppy drive to read floppy disks, but to read floppy disks that are modded that have SD cards in them, which is kind of cool.
Slide an SD card into the floppy disk.
Yeah, so it's just, it's cool to see somebody kind of revive like an old beige box. And, you know, he had to change a lot of the things internally to fit everything inside. So basically, he went from a 486 DX2, what was running at 66 megahertz with 4 megabytes of RAM, 1 megabyte of video memory, to now running a Intel i7-6700K. At 4.3 gigahertz, 16 gigabytes of RAM, 8 gigabytes of video memory, and obviously the 3.5 floppy drive can now read up to 512 gigabytes of data, which is awesome. And actually, we actually include videos of how he hacked the, well, I guess you could call it hack or modded the PC to do that with the floppy drive, which I think is one of the coolest things about this. And it's just cool because people have nostalgia for these old PCs, especially if it's a PC that you grew up using or something like that. And it's just so cool that people take the time to, you know, he could have just bought, you know, even if he didn't have a lot of money, he could have just bought a $20, $30, $40 case and put these components in. But he had nostalgia for this case and decided, I'm going to make this a project. And it took him a lot of time to cut the case and to be able to fit modern components inside, but he was able to do it, and I think it turned out really awesome.
Yeah, he actually did like some welding. The back panel is majorly modified.
Yep.
Because there is no way to mount a modern power supply or anything like that. I don't think it did it even have expansion slots. They definitely didn't line up. But yeah, this is really cool. I've seen a few of these, and this is one of the better ones, that's for sure.
Yeah, I just think it's cool. I think it's very, very cool that somebody took the time to do this and obviously modded the case and, you know, kind of made it still like retro. Like if you go to somebody's house and you see this old ass beige box sitting there, and they're like, oh no, it's an i7, it's a Skylake i7. Don't worry about it. You know,
the best would be to bring this to a LAN party. I mean,
yeah, people are like, what is this guy doing with this old, old steel tower?
Are you guys mind if I game with you?
Yeah, and then it's like one of the most powerful systems there.
That's
awesome. Yeah, definitely check it out. Again, there's two videos that we have on the post that tell you a lot about it. So definitely check it out. Really cool to see somebody do this, and I think it's just you know, it's cool to see stuff like this. It's stuff really, like, it's kind of like, you know, gets me all pumped up because it's like a huge nerd type thing. And
That's what it is. It's like super nerdy.
Yeah, so I really like it. So
yeah, hardcore.
Yes. So that is it for all of our content this week. So let's just jump right into news. And not a whole lot of crazy news this week, a lot of gaming stuff. But we'll start with our storage. We have three storage-related articles. So we'll start with Samsung finally released their SSD T3, which is their portable solid-state drive. This is the one that you guys saw at CES. I didn't go through the Samsung booth because I hate people. So,
it was pretty horrible.
Yeah, so this is their very, very small solid-state drive. This is USB Type-C. Connector on there, and it's going to be available in 250, 500, 1 terabyte, and 2 terabyte capacities.
This came out last year, and it was just it was plastic. Metal. It's metal. It's a metal case now.
Yeah,
and I believe it was just USB USB 3.
Yeah,
now it's Type C.
Yeah, so it's Type C in there, up to 450 megabytes a second transfer over that connection. So very, very fast. This is great for professionals, especially professionals shooting video or doing really high end photography. This is something that would be great to connect to your PC, especially a laptop or something like that.
Yeah, you got your MacBook and you don't have enough storage.
Yeah,
this will handle you.
Yeah, this will handle pretty nicely. So definitely cool to see that finally come out. It did look like a great drive from what you guys showed us at CES. So
yeah, I think this is probably one of the better external drives you could probably get.
Yes. So talking about external drives, Zotac, we saw a prototype of their SSD at CES, and they finally announced it. Finally, it's called the Sonix, and this is a 480 gigabyte PCI Express solid state drive. It looks really cool. Again, the one that they had at CES was the only one they had. They couldn't even take it out of the case because it was literally the only one they had. So this uses the Phison E7 controller. So currently it's only going to be available in 480 gig to start.
Yeah, that surprises me.
But I think that's just going to be for the first initial launch, and then they'll have a 1 terabyte coming out.
Yeah, I'd love to see terabyte or bigger.
But very, very fast speeds, sequential read, 2.6 megabytes a second, sequential write, 1.3. So that's really
not
fast.
Bad.
Yeah, very, very fast. Yeah, definitely. Hopefully, we'll get one of these into review because I would definitely like to check it out.
It's a good looking drive too.
Yeah, good looking.
I like the casing.
Has a nice casing. We're gonna see a lot of these because this controller is gonna be. I believe it's. I'm not sure if the controller is actually officially out yet, but we're gonna see a lot of drives like this come out, especially as we get into April ish.
Yeah.
So really excited to see this, and this is going to obviously bring a lot of speed for people who are looking for really fast drives, and this is obviously going to bring the price of fast drives down as well as we see a lot of these come out. So
definitely
pumped for that. And then our last storage news for this week is that SanDisk released their USB Type-C flash drive. So this is called their Ultra. And it is flash drive that uses the Type-C connector, and this is their fastest USB Type-C flash drive, and this will be 150 megabytes a second. So if you're looking for a fast, super small storage, this will definitely be it.
Yeah, that's pretty quick.
Yeah, and it's available, the capacities up to 128 gigabytes. So if you're looking, if you're looking to add a lot of storage at a small little, just a little thing, a little flash drive.
Yeah.
You can easily add this, to that MacBook that has a Type-C connector or anything else that will have that Type-C connector that you can add that storage. So as we talked about, we definitely talked about this on the podcast about how we're going to see all these new Type-C devices come out.
Yeah.
And we've just talked about two of them. So we're going to
see
a lot of Type-C devices come out over this year, which should be exciting because they're all using USB 3.1, which is a lot faster.
Yeah, so way faster.
All these devices are getting so much faster. So definitely, if you're a storage junkie, you'd definitely be pumped about that. Or if you're just somebody who likes your transfers to go super fast.
I think that's everyone.
Yeah.
I can't stand waiting for things to load onto USB.
Yeah, so that is definitely going to be a good time to get a lot of these devices. And all of your new motherboards obviously have the Type-C connector. At least on, you know, not as much on the X99, the board that we just talked about does, but especially on Z170, all of the new boards, for the most part, have a Type-C connector on them.
Yes,
so.
They do.
And a lot of new laptops will have the Type-C connector on
them. Yeah, laptops
too.
Especially. How long do you think before cases start to ship with those connectors?
We did see it on the Inwin 509. I believe had it on there.
Okay.
Inwin was with, that was the first case that we saw with it. You're not going to see it, at least not yet. Probably as we get to the second half of the year, we might see cases with it on there. It's just, the thing is that it's not as easily adopted yet. And the thing is too is that you can still get USB 3.1 from a normal.
Yeah.
Type A connector, and a lot of the motherboards still have a Type A connector, so.
Yeah. It seems like you're just starting to see them phase out a USB 2, the USB 2 connector even. Like, just now it's starting to be just USB 3.
Yeah. So. That's something that takes a while, you know. Yeah. And the thing is, too, it all depends. A lot of times when it comes to cases, that's an internal connector, and.
Yeah.
For the longest time, you know, on these boards that have USB 3.1, there's no internal header for the 3.1
connector. Oh, for 3.1, it's just
Yeah, so that's a thing that you have to, that's, you know, when we get
the board has to support it too.
Yeah, because when USB 3.0 ports started showing up on cases, they actually, because there was no internal header yet, there was actually, you had to take the connector and go outside of your case and connect it on the back, which was kind of annoying.
Yeah, not very elegant.
Yeah, so, you know, I think we'll see a couple cases that might have it, you know, more as a vanity thing than anything, you know?
Yeah, just to be the case that has it.
Yeah, and then as we get into, you know, end of the year, going into next year, we'll see a lot more cases with it, I think.
Cool.
Yes. So, talking about cases, this is AeroCool is a company that we don't necessarily talk about a whole lot, but they announced this thing called the Dreambox, which is a do-it-yourself kit, and basically it's a whole bunch of parts that allow you to build a PC, or allow you to build a case, but in a whole bunch of different ways, which is, I thought the whole DIY aspect of this is really cool.
I really, really like this idea.
Yeah, so it's called the Dreambox, and it comes with a bunch of aluminum parts that allow you to build your own case. But there's a bunch of different ways you can build your case. It's not just, let's put this together. Yeah. You know, you can actually...
There is a limit, though, right? What, there's three configurations?
I think there's three configurations. And I believe you can buy more parts.
Okay.
To expand and do different things. So I think it's pretty cool. You know, I think the whole DIY market is getting huge.
Absolutely.
I think that, you know, the whole idea of putting something together is I think a lot of people like that experience, and I think this just adds to it.
This is like, it's the Lego and the, what are the metal ones?
Kinects.
No,
that's the ones that have the computer.
Technics
or something.
Yeah, you know, you used to play with them as kids, and you'd build these things. You know, they sent you the parts, and you'd put all these little metal pieces together with screws and stuff, and then you'd create, you know, this little toy or whatever, you know, maybe a race car or something, right? And, like, that was so much fun. Gets your engineering side of your brain working, you know? But, like, this is like an adult version of that to me.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think that you take more pride in something that you've built yourself.
Oh, yeah.
So this is really cool. It's $150. I would like to get one of these in to review.
Yeah, I'd like to review one, but I kind of feel like that's too much. I don't know. If it's really good aluminum parts, you can justify it, but like you have to build it yourself, you know? You're doing a good portion of the work that a company normally charges for. So
yeah. So, but I mean, I still think it's a cool idea, especially coming from Aerocool, who they do make some decent cases, but they're not really out there like this. So this is something new from them, and I think it's cool. And I think they're gonna hopefully they'll capitalize on that DIY market, which I think a lot of people are. So
I think this has a place for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely for sure. So definitely, maybe we'll get one into review. Maybe I'll send it to you. I'll send it to you. So, this past week was Mobile World Congress, and usually at Mobile World Congress or around this time, we see a new Samsung phone, specifically the Galaxy, and Samsung announced their Galaxy S7 and the Galaxy S7 Edge, and one of the big parts of their presentation was about gaming, which is interesting because, you know, while we do see gaming as being obviously a big part of mobile, Samsung has really done some cool stuff with this phone, and they want, as they call it, they want it to be a PC-like gaming experience. So, obviously that's not going to be a PC-like gaming experience.
Was my first thought. Yeah. I was like, I can't rationalize. I know what you want to do, but I cannot rationalize this in my brain.
Yeah, but they've added a lot of cool features to the phone. So apparently, I was doing my research on this article, and apparently the phone itself is somewhat water-cooled.
Yeah, that's pretty neat.
It sounds like a vapor chamber. It doesn't sound like water cooling as we know it.
Yeah, there might be water in it, but it's probably a vapor chamber.
Yeah, so it sounds like, from what I've read now, so everybody's, you know, a lot of these bloggers who went to this event, as I like to call them, didn't get all the information, which is something that happens at events like this. Yeah. Nobody really has the specific information about it. On Samsung's press release that they released, it says a very thin thermal spreader. You know,
so, which to me doesn't even mean water.
Yeah, but you know, everybody's reporting it as being water cooled and something. So that sounds to me like a vapor chamber.
Yeah, somebody had their reps saying something funny, I'm sure.
Yeah, so like, I think, but again, it's good to see that they know that there's a market for gaming, and they know that people playing mobile games are the people who are really pushing the CPU, and that is good to see that they're going to make the device run cooler because of that.
That's great. That's awesome.
So
I wonder what it's going to do to the form, though.
No, it's the same form factor.
Same form. Yeah. They got jammed it all in there. Huh?
Yeah. So that's one of the cool things that they did for gamers. The second thing is this is the first smartphone to use the Vulkan API, which basically is the new version of AMD's Mantle API. So that's pretty cool. And they actually had a demo by Epic Games showing off a 3D kind of experience using the Vulkan API and Unreal Engine. And what the Vulkan API basically allows you to do is basically actively use all of the cores on the CPU in a more effective way, so you can actually get better performance.
Yeah.
So that's
like forcing things to be multi-threaded.
Yeah, exactly.
Single or dual.
So that's in there. They also have a brand new game launcher and different software features. So you can actually play the game. While you're playing a game, you can have your phone set to, so all your alerts turn on, like are off.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you're playing a game on your phone and then somebody texts you, it like messes up your game, obviously. So you can have that all turned off. You can also have a mode where it disables the recent and back key, so you don't accidentally go out of your game, much like disabling the Windows key.
Yes.
So that's something really cool. And then, obviously, a big thing with gaming these days is sharing your experience and recording yourself. So built into the phone is a new recording thing. And what's super cool is they're going to have a picture-in-picture mode where it uses the selfie camera.
Yeah, the front-facing camera.
To record you in a little picture-in-picture mode while you're playing the game. So you can kind of do like a walkthrough but people can see you as well.
On a mobile game.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty cool. I think
it's real cool.
It's cool to see Samsung do this when they don't necessarily have to. And I think it's cool that they're adding these features in specifically for gamers because the mobile gaming market is massive. It's not as big over here, more in Europe and especially Asia, but mobile gaming is very, very big. You know, and it's cool to see them not only do it on the hardware side, but do it on the software side. I'm actually pretty impressed. And if you pre-order either of the phones, you get the Samsung Gear VR headset and a bundle of six games.
That's a pretty good deal.
And I guess that will come with a game pack that gives you 200 worth of in-game currency. So,
what's the game going to be like, though? 700, 800? Or the game, the phone?
I assume you should be... I mean, depending on your mobile provider, you will be able to get it subsidized, but I don't know what it would be.
Well, I mean, this is talking about pre-order.
You can pre-order, you can pre-order through your...
provider.
Yeah, through your provider. So whatever that deal is, I don't know, but yeah, it's gonna be if you're buying it flat out, it's gonna be like $1,700.
Yeah,
but I'm still pretty impressed. I was actually, when I first saw this news, I was like, really, water cooling, really? But as I got into reading about it, I really like the software features that they've added. It's just cool to see. So kudos to Samsung, honestly.
Yeah, I like it. Definitely. So. Some probably some little, you know, some clickbait words there, but still, I think you've got a solid feature base underneath all of the press.
Yes.
So.
Yes. So, talking about gaming, we'll jump into our gaming-specific news because it's the rest of the week. It was a lot of gaming stuff. So, first, Steam VR performance test was released by Valve. So, basically, what this is this is a performance test that will let you know if your PC is ready for VR games. Yeah. So, if you're thinking about getting the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive, and you want to make sure your PC will actually be powerful enough to power these devices, this is the perfect thing to use and test. Which it's free to download through Steam. You just download it, and you can run the test. And I ran it on our test system here, and obviously it was ready because that was a GTX 980 Ti. Didn't you run it?
Yeah, I ran it on a 40. Is it 46? No, 4690. What was the last generation?
I 4770K.
Nope, not that one.
It was i5 or i7?
It's i7.
4790K. 4770 or 4790. That's the last series.
Yeah.
I don't think you know what you're talking about. You should know.
Oh yeah, 4790.
Yeah, 4790 is.
I don't know.
It's the Devil's Canyon.
I should. I just get. Well, I get confused about what I actually have.
So
okay. So 4790K and a 970 standard 970.
Yeah.
And I was ready. I don't believe it necessarily, but.
Well, I mean,
like I was in like the just on the early side of ready, but I kind of feel like the test is too easy. Because I think it's going to take a lot more than that.
Yeah, we'll have to see. But again, this just gives people the ability to see if they can specifically play games in VR. You know, so, yeah, it's just, it's good to see this. Obviously, Steam didn't have to put this out, but they did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's good for them to get people thinking that way.
Yeah, so it's cool.
I
so
mean, it's cool because it tells you. I'm sure the one thing it'll do is it'll tell you if you absolutely aren't going to be able to do it.
Yeah,
right.
So that's a good thing. I think that a lot of people who don't know a lot about PCs think that these headsets are just the headset. You don't have to connect the headset to anything.
Oh, there's a mistake.
Yeah, but I think. I could be wrong, but I think there are people that think that, right?
I think you're right.
Or, oh, I can just connect this to my laptop, and they think that the power is actually in the headset.
Like it's got processors in the headset.
Yeah, the headset is what, but they don't, I think, I think there's a good amount of people that think that. Not specifically us PC people, because we know what these things are.
Yeah, well, we're in the news. We see what's
general going. Population of people who might buy these headsets will get it and be like, wait, I have to connect it to something? That's what I think.
Yeah.
So I think this is good to for especially for those people. And again, you can run the test and see if your system's capable of playing VR or, you know, compatible, I would say. So
yeah.
So yeah, it's free. Just type in Steam VR in Steam and you should be able to go ahead and check it out. And it's free download, run it and see if you can play VR.
Yeah. So, I guess I should have ran it on my Ultrabook just to see what happened.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is I have an Alienware here that I should run it on laptop and my and I do have that Lenovo gaming laptop. I should run on that as well. Yeah. So
see, because some of the things we saw at CES is that, like, they're making backpacks, so you can put a laptop in the backpack, wear the backpack, and then actually walk around with your VR attached, so you don't have the cords dangling around.
Yeah, that's funny.
It makes sense. It's cool. Yeah. It's kind of crazy. Like, yeah, there's companies like Gigabyte, their laptop brand, they're actually actively designing laptops for VR. So
yeah, well,
it's a big deal. Bob is a hater, but it's a big deal.
I'm not sold on the whole VR thing. I'm just not sold on it. But
it's just something you have to. Maybe you won't be sold till you try it.
Yeah, we'll see. Anyways,
yeah.
Going back to a real PC game, Fallout 4, which has been out for a good, 3 months, 4 months, something like that?
Yeah, at least.
Anyways, one of the biggest games of, obviously, 2015. There have been rumors about a survival mode, which will change the whole type of gameplay and everything. Yeah. So somebody, Reddit user, which of course all of these Reddit users always find these things, found a full overview of the survival mode in the game, in the game's files, and we posted it all for you. So it would change how the game is played, how the combat is changed, how, you know, just different parts of the game are changed.
It basically makes it a lot harder.
Yeah, it makes the game a lot harder. So for people who have already beat the game, this will make the game a lot harder and much more lifelike, I feel.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say.
You know, because, like, one of the big things is, like, the fast travel. Fast travel is disabled now. So if you want to go somewhere, you have to physically walk there. So, again, more like real life.
Yeah. I actually love the manual and quick saving. They don't exist. You have to go and find a bed and sleep.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Like,
so this is gonna make the game a lot harder, and I think for a lot of hardcore Fallout 4 fans, this is gonna be really cool.
I think there's a lot of people that just like this gameplay style that would be interested in this.
Yes,
like they love the grind, you know.
Yeah. So, not sure when this will be available. I've heard that it's still a couple months out before you get this, and this will obviously be, added to the game through DLC. I believe it's going to be free though. But
it should be.
It's going to be. Yeah, it's going to be added to the game in a month or so, I believe. So, so if you're a Fallout 4 fan, definitely stay tuned for that, because that is seems like going to be pretty cool.
Definitely.
Another game that was kind of leaked a little bit this week was Gears of War Ultimate Edition. The PC requirements and screenshots were leaked. So apparently, Microsoft put this game up on the Windows Store for a day for some reason, and then took it down.
It's called advertising.
Yeah, it's the way to advertise these days. So Gears of War Ultimate Edition obviously is the PC remake of Gears, and they list the requirements, which minimum specs is a one thing. You have to be running Windows 10 because this will be built. This is going to be built for DX12. So minimum specs is an i5 or an AMD FX 6-core processor, 8 gigabytes of RAM, 2 gigabytes of VRAM. And the GPU, they say, is a AMD R7-260 or a GTX 650 Ti, which isn't a whole lot. But if we go to their recommended, it's an i5, a 290X or a 970. And then they have ideal specs, which is, like, I guess if you want to play it.
Oh, don't forget 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, on their
recommended. That's just on recommended.
Yeah. That the ideal specs is an R9 390X in a GTX 980 Ti. Ideal specs is basically if you want to run it at the highest setting possible.
Yeah.
But they also released screenshots and look pretty good. Although they're not 4K screenshots, they do look pretty good. I think we talked about this before. I don't know if we talked about it in the podcast, but I know you and I talked about it. As for me, I played Gears of War on Xbox 360, and the single player is one of the best single players I've ever played. Yeah. For me, at least. I really like the story. I like the scenes and how they bring you into the whole story of what's going on in the world, and all of the scenes kind of give you that, you know, like you're in this kind of post-apocalyptic type deal. So I think that if you've never played Gears, this will be a game that you might want to check out.
I'm kind of looking forward to this, having never played.
And what's great is, obviously, I assume they're going to have multiplayer, but the single player is very good. So if you're looking for a single player game that you can kind of play on your own time, this will be a game that's like that. Yeah. But I do like games like that, because not all of us want to be super esports and super MMO in raids and taking...
Every once in a while, you're feeling like a loner, you know?
Yeah.
You just want to play on your own.
Yeah, so... this game will be that. Now, no word on when it's going to be released. Oh, one other thing is that on the page listed the file size, which is 52.76 gigabytes.
Yeah.
So that's big.
I think the RAM thing is actually, like, that's kind of crazy to me. 16 gigs as recommended? That's... Either this is horribly optimized, or the textures are just huge.
Yeah. I'm hoping that it's going to be a beautiful game, because I'll play it.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
One
way or the other, I think it's going to look really good, but I just... That's a lot of RAM, like...
Yeah. And the thing is, that's a big file size.
Seriously.
You know, 52 gigs is a lot.
For a shooter, you know?
Yeah.
This is... Yeah. That's... It's interesting.
Yeah. So, no word yet on when the game will be released. Apparently, Microsoft is going to have a press event at some point, and they might announce when this game's coming out. So,
yeah.
So yeah, pretty cool. Pumped about that, actually, because that's one of those games that I really enjoyed. So, talking about a game that I really enjoyed this past weekend, as I said earlier, or at least I did. I played The Division. Really enjoyed playing it. Was one of I might get it. I just don't know if I have the time for it, because I really like the game. I like the gameplay. I like the whole world and the story. So the game is actually going to launch with a novel that you can buy separately. I assume they're going to have some type of deal where you can get the game and this novel together, but you can just buy
like a bundle.
Yeah, but you could. This is actually a real book, like a physical book. It's called New York Collapse, and it's basically like an urban survival guide. But what they've done is they made it like this was somebody's that they picked up, and they have all these like notes and stuff in it.
Yeah, they like journaled on it.
Yeah, it's like a journal in it and stuff. So it adds to the story, and I think that this is super cool, because, you know, The Division is a game that's based in our current time, and it's about surviving, and like to add to that story, I think is super cool, and I don't think enough games do this.
Yeah, like I was saying to you when you first showed me this, like I feel like sometimes games don't have the ability to fully flesh out their full content ability, you know, like the game would be clunky, or they would break the game if they were able to like fully, you know, expand on everything they want to as far as storytelling goes. So that include a novel or like a book with it lets them like really expand that.
Yeah, and what's cool about this is it's not just like a novel. It's like they've really made it look like it's part of the game, you know. And
yeah,
I think it's super cool, and I really like the Division story. They actually, I was just like sitting on watching Amazon. I have Amazon Prime, so I was like watching some stuff on Prime, and they actually have a live, it's about 30-minute live action movie that they produced called The Division Agent Origins. It's free if you're Prime. And it's really cool. It's done pretty well. And it kind of, it starts at the beginning of like the outbreak, which caused all the stuff to happen, and how the agents get activated. It's actually really cool, and it gives you more kind of, if you don't necessarily know the story, this kind of gives you the beginning of how everything happens, and it's really cool. And I actually watched it the other day.
Yeah.
It made me want to play the game. So they're obviously doing their job right on that.
Yeah, they are really going all out with this game.
Yeah, so I'm really excited. I still don't know if I'll have time to play the game, but I still just might get it just to, you know, even to do the single player, I still might do it.
You know what's interesting is that I feel like, so you get to play quite a bit of the game in the beta, right?
Yeah.
And so now you have like a good idea of whether you want to play it or not. But if you had never been able to play the beta, would you have just bought the game?
I don't know. That's what's so great about betas.
And that's what's, well, it's interesting to me too, because like Star Wars Battlefront, like I was like all about that. Then I played the beta and I was like, yeah, I don't feel like I necessarily need to buy this. It's cool, but I feel like I got enough of the experience without having to pay for anything.
That's true. I think for a lot of people, I mean, I played the beta and I wanted to get Star Wars. I haven't got it yet just because I haven't had time to play games.
Yeah.
But I actually have been thinking about buying it this week. I might buy it this week. You know, I gives you a good idea. I think betas are great because, and I think especially open betas that are available to everybody, they allow people to play the game, you know, obviously before they buy it. And it's more than a demo too, because, you know, there's a lot of demos out there and things that you can download. Because that was like how we did it, right? That's how it worked before.
Yeah, do you remember that? Yeah.
You'd get a demo disc or whatever. This gives you the full playing with other people too type deal, and I think that's super cool.
And it's the game engine running it. It's the full game running. So like demos were always like it could be nothing. It could be not even close to what the game was going to be, you know, because it was just trying to showcase.
Yeah, a lot of times it was like a level that you play in 5 minutes and then you were done.
Yeah,
betas allow you to. The thing is too is like you can play a game and you can play it for, you know, like if it was a, like I said, that demo, you could play for 5 minutes and be like, oh man, I really like this. But then, you know, an open beta allows you to play for 3 days and you could go through playing it for 12, 13 hours and be like, okay, you know, after a couple hours, this gets kind of boring. I don't think I'm going to buy the game. So I think it really gives you that ability to basically have a full game there and kind of run through and see, okay, you know, I liked it for the first hour, but after that, I just don't feel like it's worth, you know, $50-$60. You know, it's going to get redundant, things like that. I mean, that's how it was for me for Titanfall.
Yeah.
Like, Titanfall, I liked. They had the beta. I played it. I liked it. But I was like, it gets redundant.
Yeah.
To me,
and I bought it. I bought Titanfall after it had been out for a while, so I didn't spend much on it, and I played it probably as much as you played the beta.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the joy of beta. And I think now that we have, you know, because back then when we got demos, they all came on discs and in magazines and all that kind of stuff.
They sucked. They essentially sucked.
Yeah. So now, you know, with the internet and fast internet and, you know, because like Division beta was like 26 gigs.
It sure was.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, with we have the ability to do that now. It's just great that we can try these games out before they come out. And as they're developed, like, you know, especially with like Epic Games, like playing Unreal Tournament, which is still in alpha, but we can play it.
Yeah.
You know, games like that. Like we played Paragon a couple weekends ago, and that's in alpha.
Yeah.
You know, and things are getting added to the game, and it's changing.
And all their other games too.
Yeah.
It really, really showcases what they're doing.
Yeah, and it's.
But
cool.
I think it's really dependent on whether the game manufacturer is doing a good job, right? Or not manufacturer, but you know what I mean. Like if they're not doing a good job, it's like make and break for them.
Yeah.
Like the beta, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like like I said, I think this is great for us as gamers, but for the developer, it's like this is a huge risk.
And I think too, it's a way for them to test the servers too.
Yeah.
Especially if it's an online game. It's a way to test their content delivery platform too, because everybody's gonna be downloading the game.
Yep.
So I think it's a great test for that, because you don't want to launch and then all your servers crash and your...
No, one way or another, they have to test these things.
Yeah, and their content delivery system crashes and you have all these issues, which has happened in the past, where just the servers were overloaded, nobody could download the game, and you know, this is a great way to test that, especially that Star Wars Battlefront. I mean, that was the biggest beta ever. And the servers were rock solid, from what I experienced.
Yeah.
You know? And they actually modified the game throughout the beta because they've realized that the one map was completely, if you played on one team, you'd always lose. You'd never win.
It was completely unbalanced.
Yeah. So they changed it by the end of the beta. So as the last day of the beta, it was actually balanced, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's what's great about the beta. I'm a huge fan of the beta. I think that if you're coming out with a AAA title, especially a AAA title that's multiplayer, you should have a beta.
I agree.
You know, it just makes sense that way. So, and it can hurt you or it can really help you, but I think that in this day and age, it's necessary to have it.
If you have an awesome beta, I mean, it's just advertising on advertising for you.
I think both Star Wars and Division were great betas, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Just some thoughts on beta gaming.
So talking about a game that's not out yet, that hopefully there's an open beta for.
This I'm super looking forward to, honestly.
So this is our last gaming news, so yeah. We don't have to rant on that much. But so Doom is coming out in just about 3 months. This will be the first Doom game in 12 years, which means I'm really old.
It's true, we are.
So they have been releasing a blog post about the game and why the game is going to be awesome, and their last blog post was really interesting. It talked about the game engine, which is the ID Tech 6, which of course even me, I really haven't heard all that much about, because the whole ID Tech engine was kind of just a disappointment. The past few revisions of it just hasn't been great. It hasn't really...
it's not one of the forerunners, that's for sure.
Yeah, so... and they knew that.
Frontrunner.
Yeah, so what they actually did was they hired people... They hired a bunch of people from the Crytek team.
Oh, really?
And the Crytek team, of course, which you know for CryEngine, which obviously powers Far Cry, which is one of the most visually stunning games. The whole series is visually stunning. So I
actually think that the CryEngine is probably the strongest game engine.
Yes,
I think it's probably better than Frostbite.
So, basically, one of the developers, this is his exact quote as I'm going to read it. He says, "We want players to wonder how Doom and ID Tech 6, which is the engine, games can be so visually stunning at 60 frames per second, 1080p on all platforms, when other titles cannot even achieve a similar look at 30 frames per second." So this is talking about, I mean, the 1080p at 60 frames per second is obviously talking about just consoles in general.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this game is supposed to be, from what they're saying, and with ID Tech 6, it's going to be a very, very visually stunning, hopefully.
Yeah. From all the screens, it looks astonishing.
Yeah, so for all the screenshots that were released and everything, the game looks beautiful, and hopefully this will bring ID Tech 6 kind of back into the forefront of, you know, games being based off of it. And hopefully we'll see other games besides Doom being based off of it that look amazing. You know.
Yeah, I don't really care who makes the engine. Just make me an awesome game.
Yeah, so...
I actually really like that. It's not just that they want to make astonishingly beautiful games. They want to make games that are... The engine is incredibly well-coded and efficient. That's something that's not necessarily, I mean, it is pushed by all of the engine developers, but it's not necessarily achieved or one of their main goals, I would say.
Yeah.
And it's actually really important because, you know, the better you can be, the more you can get out of the game and run it on, like, more platforms.
Yeah,
so totally. I think that's really important that developers are looking that way.
Yeah, so I'm pretty pumped for it. They had the closed beta or closed alpha?
Closed alpha, I think.
So hopefully before it comes out, we'll see an open beta.
That'd be awesome.
So that'd be kind of cool to see that.
We've seen gameplay too, haven't we?
Yes.
I thought we saw little bits, little clips.
Yeah, there was a lot. I mean, the
Months ago.
Yeah, months ago we saw some stuff, and it looked good, but that was from PS4, I think. It wasn't PC.
Okay.
So I'd like to see, obviously I'd like to see PC and see how that looks.
It looks really, really good, and it looks really fun.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how this game does. Obviously excited about it. It's, again, 12 years since the Doom game, and for a lot of us, at least our age, Doom was a game that we grew up playing, and so it's cool to see it still be around and to play that same type of style of game, in a more 3D setting than we originally played it. pretty excited for it. Hopefully it looks as good as they say it's going to be, so...
Yeah,
definitely pumped and excited for that. So that is the news this week. As I said, a lot of gaming news, which is actually pretty exciting for me because I had a lot of cool games coming out and stuff to talk about.
Can't get enough.
Yes. Talking about gaming, I wanted to get it done this week, but it's just a really long review and a really great laptop that I'll be checking out. I'll get the review to you guys next week, which is the Lenovo Y700 Touch. 15-inch gaming laptop from Lenovo. It's really great. And what's great about the review is they sent me all their accessories. So backpack, mouse, and a headset, all that come with it.
That's cool.
And, so I cover all the products in the review, too. So it's basically like three or four reviews in one. That's why it's taking me a long time to get done. But it is, really, really cool laptop. We'll have that review for you next week. I'll be taking a look at a case. It's been a while since I've reviewed a case, I feel. I have a couple here, but...
Yeah, I think it has been.
So I'll be taking a look at BitPhoenix's Pandora ATX. So this is the ATX version of their Pandora case.
This looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a cool case. So I'm excited to take a look at that. And obviously, with our cases, we'll be doing video. So I'll have a video of it as well. And I'll be taking a look at a super, super fast USB 3.1 drive.
Oh, yeah.
And this is the Patriot Supersonic Magnum 2. And this thing is super fast. According to them, I haven't tested it yet, but they're saying 400 megabytes a second read, 300 megabytes a second write.
Yeah. We saw this at CES.
And they're sending me the 256 gigabyte version.
Oh, nice.
So it's going to be fun to have a nice, basically like an SSD in my pocket.
Seriously.
Definitely pumped to check out all those things coming next week. Yeah. So as we always try to do, we try to BS a little bit at the end of the podcast. And did you do anything fun this past week?
Yeah, I did. We actually had really nice weather last weekend, so I was finally able to get back outside and ride. I rode a ton, like 6.5 hours. This weekend, tech-wise, not too much. I can't really, just some TV, you know, and some Battlefield.
Nice.
So.
Still playing Battlefield.
Of course. You know, I just can't move on.
You should have played the Division
I was outside. Yeah. And then since I had, like, spent all of my free time outside, I had to spend the rest of it, you know. I didn't have to, but I chose to spend the rest of it with my wife, so.
That's good.
You know, that can go.
Yes, well. For sure. Well, sort of.
Yeah.
But,
How about you?
Didn't do a whole lot of stuff, I don't think. No, but we did a lot of cool stuff. So, one, Think Computers is now on Snapchat.
Awesome.
So, if you want to see what's going on behind the scenes, you can add us on there. It is just Think Computers, all one word, on Snapchat. Add us. I usually try to post a couple things a day, what's going on, what we're reviewing, stuff like that. And obviously, when we go to events, that'll be a huge thing for us. We'll be Snapchat. So, pretty pumped for that to get some, just to get people kind of behind the scenes what's going on. So it took a lot of time to do that. Secondly, I don't know if you saw it in a couple of our videos, but we're taking a lot of time now on our videos to really give you a full review of a product, not just necessarily an unboxing. When there's products that we have the ability to do the full review in the time frame on video, we're going to do that. So you'll see that with the CM Storm Zornit 2 gaming mouse video. It's basically nice. Like a full review. So I go over the product and then I go over the lighting, and then I go over the software, and then I tell you how it performs all in one video, rather than just like a little overview that we've been doing for a while. So we're kind of trying to change the format, give you guys more information on the video, so you don't have to go to the video and see a little bit and then go to the review. You can actually see everything in the video, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And we'll be putting a lot of our videos on Facebook now, too. So as the months go along, you'll see a lot more video content specifically native to Facebook. So if you're obviously on Facebook, you don't have to leave Facebook to go to YouTube. Or if you're, you know, like on a mobile device, it'll be easier for you to watch our content. So we'll have all that stuff. So basically, nice. A lot of Think Computers related things didn't do much for myself.
It's behind the scenes stuff for Think Computers.
Yeah, a lot of behind the scenes stuff. Not really, you know. It was really nice. Sadly, I was working on that Gigabyte X99 review, which was a long time. So I didn't really have a lot of time to super enjoy the weather. And now it's snowing. Bad. It's snowing right now. So.
Oh man.
So yeah.
Oh, it's snowing here too. So.
Yeah, so pretty.
We live in hell during the wintertime.
Yeah. So, yeah. So that's basically it, guys. For the podcast, as always, you can find us on iTunes and you know, Think Computers, all one word, pretty much on any one of your podcasting services. And we will have a full show notes page. So everything that we talked about here on the podcast will be on the show notes page. So as you're going through and listening to us talk, you can click on the article and see what exactly we're talking about and get all the information and all that kind of stuff. So until next week, we'll catch you guys later.